When the art day gets rough, you just gotta keep on punching. And here's your Thunder Punch Daily with Jersey Drozd.
I got another thoughtful question from the Ask Me Anything form at jdrozd.com/AMA. It's an Ask Me Anything. And it's a bit of a long question, but I want to read it all because it was. I think it's an interesting one and a kind one in the sense that there's a second question. But here we go. This is a two-parter. One, making comics for public, wider consumption today involves a lot of things that maybe aren't necessarily the things that one excitedly looks forward to or is even thinking about as they are headlong and heart deep in the thick of making their comic. I love that expression as an aside there, the heart deep in the thick of making their comic. That is how it felt for me. Continuing, things like marketing, promoting, and keeping somewhat of a social media presence. How do you balance the joyful flow state, lost and in love with the making of the comic side of things with the more business-oriented part of the process? Is it something that you don't even think about until after the book is made? When does that side of things start popping up on your radar? And how do you feel about it? We'll get to part two in a second, so I'm going to address part one first. And part of the objective, one objective, I should say, of doing these microcasts in the lead up to my book, Dr. Bear and the Case of the Two-Faced Statue, drbear.com, drbear.com, is to share a little bit of the more candid parts of my experience of making this book, to both to practice vulnerability, but also with the hypothesis that the more candid parts of the experience might be some of that sawdust, as they say, selling your sawdust, that will help generate interest, energy, compassion, enthusiasm, you know, affection for this project. Really trying to encapsulate some of my experience, the thing that only I went through in the making of this book. And, you know, 5 years ago, 10 years ago, I would have maybe argued that this is a false dichotomy, that there's like this loving the process and then having to tell the world about it. And I would probably would have said something like, when you're love, you want to tell the whole world, quoting Carl Sagan. But if I'm being perfectly honest, I feel like this is something I'm really not great at. It's something where I think about the marketing stuff and the promotional ideas and methods to get the word out about it. I do think about it throughout the entire process because, you know, when you spend 2 years making something, there's a lot of ebb and flow to it. There's a lot of parts where you feel like this is like the non-glamorous, not in love with it part of it. And then my thoughts can shift to some of those things like, okay, well, let's think about like a year down the road. What do you do to market this thing? I also signed up for a marketing course right at the start of making the book because one of the things that I felt pretty intensely when I began working on Dr. Bear was I've waited a long time to make this book. I have made a lot of projects over the years. Some have done okay. All of them have been, you know, artistically, creatively rewarding. I don't regret any of them. But I'm still at a point where comics isn't paying all my bills. And to be honest, it probably never will be the thing that pays all of my bills. And that's okay. I don't mean that as any kind of like defeatist statement. It's just like, that's just like the reality of it is that like only a small percentage of people ever get to like do it all the time. And you know, as side hustles go, I've got a good one in terms of teaching. But there was like, yeah, when I started out, I was like, I want this one. It would be wonderful if this one was this book, Dr. Bear, was the thing that became, it had enough energy behind it that I could do more than one. I could do Dr. Bear book two, book three, etc. That would be great. It may or may not happen, but let's put our back into figuring out a way to market this thing so that it's more possible. So I was thinking about it at the start. And I, like I said, I took a marketing course and I've got a few ideas. And one of the ideas that came out of the marketing course was this microcast series, like share a little bit more of the story around the making of the book, and also share a little bit, something a little bit more authentic and real about me that will filter out the people who don't want the book anyway, right? The person who asked this question, evidently identifies with, or at least like resonates with, some of the things that I've been sharing in these little mini stories and essays. But the question was, how do I balance it? And that's where I think I'm really not great at it, because I get overwhelmed by it. And what do I get overwhelmed by? Once I start doing it, I quickly get sort of stuck in a lot of self-critical thinking, in that this is performative, this is inauthentic, this is me clanging a trash can lid out of somebody's house, outside of somebody's house, right? That's an old thing. I feel like that's something a lot of us can relate to, is this idea of like, well, I feel like I'm shouting in people's faces, or I feel like I'm bothering everybody when I do this. And I know that is, because of the way these algorithms work, what I feel like is shouting, everybody else feels like is whispering, right? Like, I've posted things that like go, you know, like you have like, I forget, it's over 1,000 people that follow me on Instagram, but when I post things, like only 40 people see them because of the nature of algorithms and so on. So it's like I could always be talking about it more. But besides that sort of inhibition that kicks in, because I feel like that's an easy one to overcome. I can talk myself out of that, right? You got to talk about the book. Nobody's seeing it anyway unless you talk about it more. But the overwhelm happens when I get really bogged down in this feeling of, to quote an old quote from Merlin Mann, am I just brushing my beautiful hair in public? There's something feels inherently inauthentic and narcissistic about constantly banging the drum about my thing. When it comes up in conversation, or when it comes up amongst my students, like this idea of like the different books that I've done, when it's in adjacent to another thing that is ostensibly about helping somebody, like in a classroom, then it doesn't feel like I'm stealing a spotlight from anybody, or that I'm trying to. Well, here we go. This is where we get into my baggage. It's challenging for me sometimes to ask for the space that I need. And I feel sometimes like marketing and promoting my stuff is like asking for the space that I need. Hey, I'm asking you to think about me. Now, I'm doing this right now with this little essay thing. But again, there is this implicit sort of missional bit encoded into it, in that I'm sharing these things in the hope that it like helps somebody else feel like they're not alone, or that they're seen, and that they can relate to or identify with the things that I find challenging about this, right? And that makes it easier for me to do it. Because if I was just talking about it as the problems themselves, I'm like, well, this is something for my therapist. This is something for one of my close friends. It's not something for the broader, wider public. I don't want to cry in public. That is a deep fear that I have. And we could go into a whole lot of things about that, but I don't think it's necessary right now. But so when this overwhelm happens, let's stick on that. I throw the phone down. I'm like, I'm just not even gonna look at this stuff. I'm not gonna look at social media. I'm not gonna look at Facebook. I'm not gonna look at anything. I'm not gonna think about any posts. I'm not gonna schedule anything. I'm not gonna write any marketing copy. The overwhelm is the perfect word. It feels like that. It feels like it's too much in my head right now. I heard Greg Davis, the British comedian, once say that he had to take a nap at 10:30 because after 40 minutes of writing, his head was full of bees. Oh, I love that image. I find that a very relatable image. That's how it feels when I spend a little bit of time thinking about marketing stuff and making a few posts, and I'm bad at typing on my phone. I'm so bad at typing on my phone. So then I think, oh, well, maybe I'll schedule some of these things. I'll make an Airtable and I'll schedule out a whole lot of posts ahead of time. So I don't have to think about it so much. And then I start thinking about like, how am I going to talk about these ideas? And I don't want to write more than a couple sentences because it's too much try to manage my language and try to make it clear and not make it clumsy. And also now I'm talking about myself more and I'm trying to take up space, and then boom, all of a sudden it's like, well, how about we just don't do it at all? And that's the spiral that I've caught myself in. And that was where I was at the outset of making the book, where I said, let's take a marketing class and see what we can do differently this time. And one of the things about that marketing class was they really leaned on this idea of an email list, and the Dr. Bear page, which is at drbear.com or jdros.com/drbear. There's a bunch of calls to action. There's a bunch of buttons to sign up for the email list, but I don't update the email list as much as I should. And hopefully by the time this recording is public, I will have done a lot more email newsletters. But it's really hard. It's not that I don't hate the idea of talking about my book when prompted or when it comes up in a conversation. I'm happy to do it because I like, as you've heard me say, I love this book. I love the characters. I love all the work that went into it. But the idea of starting the conversation is very difficult for me. I can't remember if this has come up in any of these little microcasts, but I used to think I was an extroverted person, but I'm not. As a matter of fact, I've done some typology tests, and the tests reveal this in my somatically, in my heart, I feel like, no, I'm an introverted person. I, when I go to a gathering, it is really challenging for me to go strike up a conversation with somebody about me. If it's something where it's about something we just experienced at a conference or something, hey, that talk was really great, right? But to go up and say, hi, I'm Drewzy Droz, I make comic books, I just wanted to meet you. I have done it, I can do it, but it takes a lot of spinning up for me to do it. And when I think, what would Teacher Drewzy say to me? Because this is something I lean on a lot when I'm getting into these funks or these spirals. Well, what would Teacher Drewzy say to that kid, that student? And I'd say, well, this is a necessary part of the gig. You have to network, get your name out there, and sort of get in front of the work. And when I tell the students, and I mean it when I say it, it's you're earnest, you're charming, you can do this. And isn't it funny how we're always so bad at taking our own advice? I think it's helpful that I have been capturing a lot of the parts of the process that I really love doing. I've been collecting stories about this was a very energy-filled moment of the process. This was a very dark moment of the process. The renaming of the book was one of those dark moments. Collecting those, I think, is helpful, but that's where my journaling comes in, is capturing these stories, just a few sentences here and there about those experiences, so that I have something to turn into marketing material. But it takes a lot of energy for me to sit down and turn it into an actual blog post or even a microcast like this. I'm going to go back to the question, make sure I'm answering it properly. How do I balance it? Like I said, I don't feel like I'm very successful at it. And in terms of balancing, whether or not my marketing is successful, well, sales will tell me that. Impressions, clicks, email signups will tell me that. But in terms of how do I emotionally balance it? I don't. And that's, I think, something I want to keep working on in the years to come, is not only getting comfortable with it, but finding a way to listen to what's happening in my body, when energetically, how I'm feeling about this. If I'm overwhelmed right now, can I stop for 5 minutes, focus on something else, maybe something as simple as just breathing, and then see if I have the wherewithal to get back to it again, rather than just punching out, letting myself get so overwhelmed that I just hit the ejector seat and I don't attend to it for a week or two. That won't service the book. But yeah, it's I know this is going to sound strange to hear as somebody who did like a video podcast for years. It's really hard for me to put my face in front of a camera and talk about my book and why you should buy it. I can do it in the service of discussing a topic, of teaching, of getting other people excited about making their own stuff. But getting in front and asking for that space for myself is something that I find very challenging. And I find it very energy draining. And like I said, I'm committed to leveling up at that. And I think I've got some strategies to do it. So let's address the second question. I'm so grateful for this. I really am. Number two, what is the best way to support you when Dr. Bear releases? Pre-order at my local comic shop? Order on Amazon? Put an order request in at the local library? What actionable steps will help the most? Bless you for asking that question. That goes right back to what I just talked about. And I think this is why I saved the second question. Because like, when you start the conversation with me, oh, I can get going. Because somebody's asking, somebody's interested, you know? Instead of me just like telling everyone without a prompt. Yeah. I mean, just as a quick little sidebar. This is totally, yeah, it relates to the way I teach. Like I walk into the room with a plan, but I spend a good amount of time feeling out the room to figure out what they need. And if I can't detect it, I'll ask them directly, what do you need right now? What does this room need? You know, and then let's adjust the plan to that. I don't like prescribing that. I like to respond to. But that's not to excuse myself from walking in and asking for that space. So anyway, the question. You know, I thought about this pretty hard. And I was trying to think what would be the actionable steps that will help the most. Naturally, all of them are great, right? Pre-ordering, that is wonderful, especially from an independent bookseller or a local comic store. But you know what? If you use Amazon, pre-order on Amazon. Amazon is a pretty big measuring tool for whether or not a book's successful. If my book became somehow of note on Amazon's algorithms, like there's a big bump in pre-orders, yeah, then it would show up more for people. You know, other people who are interested in this are also interested in that kind of thing. Putting an order in at your local library, that would be awesome. But I think the one that feels like it would be the biggest return for me is notify, if you have children or if you're in any way connected to a local public school, an elementary school in particular, grades 3 through 6 in that range, reaching out to the English language arts teachers, the ELA teachers, or the school librarian about the book and pointing them at drbear.com, B-A-E-R.com. By the time this episode is public, not just on my Patreon, there will be a call to action item on that page to book me for a school visit. Now, I haven't figured it out at the time of this recording, but I'm going to work out the math of what makes sense for me to do in terms of driving. Like, what is the farthest out I can go and have it be cost effective for me to go do free school visits? And then beyond that range, like let's say I live in Columbus, Ohio. If you're in Anchorage, Alaska, okay, well, then we can do a virtual visit. And I'm saying this at the risk of being immodest. I do a good school visit, whether I'm in person or virtual. I'm a pretty good virtual visit as well. So that call to action button, I should have said at the start, is to book me for a free school visit in the hope that the school will also order books for their library or maybe even order books that the kids can have, like maybe order books from my publisher that I can sign and they can ship to the school. Something with like book plates. I will send them like 200 signed book plates that they can put in copies that the kids can buy at the school. Why am I saying this? The book is for kids. And if enough kids get the book and talk to other kids about the book, that is the word of mouth campaign that I feel like this book needs. Yes, it would be awesome if I got a Kirkus Star review. Yes, it would be awesome if Publishers Weekly talked about the book, and my publisher and I will work together to make that happen. But getting kids to ask their librarians about the book will be a huge thing for me. And booking me, like the fact that I'm offering these free visits, hopefully will get me into the spaces where the kids are, where I can do my teaching bit that I think I'm pretty good at, to empower these kids to feel like they're creative individuals, because we all are creative individuals, even if we don't identify as artists. And then they're going to want a piece, they're going to want an artifact of that experience, and that's in getting the book with the signed book plate, right? So I would say that that would be, if I were to prioritize these or put them on a hierarchy, contacting your local school to notify them about drbear.com, this really great teaching artist and cartoonist who is offering free school visits. That call to action button is going to have real lesson plans that teachers will be able to identify as being, you know, supportive of the work they're doing in their school. The button on the Dr. Bear page will get them there to show them, like, this is what I have to offer. There's going to be video, there's going to be lesson plans, and a full description of what a virtual visit and what an in-person visit could look like. And even a link to schedule a meeting with me, because I will also customize my visits based on what that school, what that classroom needs. I'm really good at that. That is the marketing that I think will be the most effective, is getting me into those spaces so that the teachers and the students can see not just, you know, what I bring as a teaching artist, but like how all of that gets funneled into this book that I think they're all going to enjoy. After that, I don't have a preference. I don't think enough people are paying attention to my social channels or my email list to mobilize for a, hey, January 25th, everybody go pre-order on this date or something like that. I don't think there's enough people who are listening that would give that enough of a bump that would make a big enough difference to make the book succeed or fail. I guess also, I mean, if you don't have a connection to a public school, your local library. If you're not in the Central Ohio area, again, I do really awesome virtual visits. I could do something that would be over a Zoom webinar where the patrons don't even have to all come out. I know we're all tired of Zoom because of the pandemic, but there is something really wonderful about how it opens up access to people who can't necessarily travel to their local library. So I would say notify your local library, not just about the book, but also to the page where they can book a free visit with me. I'm really committing myself to do a lot of visiting. I think that's the investment I need to make in order to get this book selling enough that, I don't know, that it could actually, you know, replace some of my income I make as a teaching artist. So thank you so much for asking that question, both questions. Like I said, they were thoughtful. They got me thinking inward about things that I've been struggling with. And they got me to clarify a need that I have. I need people to help me connect with elementary schools and libraries so that I can be of service to them. And then hopefully they can reciprocate by supporting me. So, and if you have a thought, question, or wondering that you want to submit like that, you can go to jdroz.com/AMA, and that takes you to a form. It's completely anonymous. There is a follow-up prompt to ask for a little clarification onto why you're asking this question, but that's optional. And it's completely confidential. I'm not going to share it on these microcasts. So, and then finally, I'll say, if you haven't checked it out yet, drbear.com, doctor, the whole word, drbear.com. And that is this middle grade graphic novel that I have really put a lot of myself into. And it means a lot to me. And I really, I hope a lot of people check it out. You can read more about it there. And there's all sorts of prompts you can interact with besides the, you know, book me as for a workshop. You know, there's like ways to pre-order, sign up for the mailing list, and so on. Okay. I'll be back soon with another Thunder Punch Daily. And until then, remember, everybody.
Today, Tila made a mistake, but instead of trying to correct it, she ran away. That was an even bigger mistake. Making mistakes is part of being human, but punishing yourself or quitting because of it is no way to make things better. The right thing to do is accept your error and try not to make that same mistake again. That's a lot smarter than running away. Until our next exciting adventure, goodbye for now.